What's up, everybody? Energy's Love Podcast. Obviously, we know it's the Energy's Love Podcast. I don't know why I keep saying it's the Energy's Love Podcast, but you know all about it because you guys are loyal and valid listeners. We appreciate all the love and support that we get. If you haven't already, go out to iTunes, subscribe, rate us, review, do something along those lines so that we can help the podcast grow and expand and reach more listeners, which is always the drive behind it. Got our Facebook page up and going where we have a lot of information about not just the guests and the events and the different things and our sponsors, but we also do a lot of Facebook Live videos, and it's quite fun. If you haven't checked those out already, by all means, go do so. And of course, you can find all of our episodes and all of our contact information and everything about the podcast at energyislovepodcast.com. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Crystal Water Float Spa in Twilley, Utah. Online at crystalwaterfloat.com or their Facebook page, Crystal Water Float Spa. Crystal Water Float is a beautiful, wonderful place to float. You guys know it. If you haven't been yet, by all means, get out there and crawl inside one of those tanks and sit back and relax. I should say lay back and relax because you don't really sit. You float. You float right on top of the water and disappear into the most amazing experience. Crystal Water Float Spa is also the only U.S. distributor for the Dream Pod. So if you're at that point and you're looking to open up your own float center, maybe you want to put one in your house even, contact Crystal Water Float Spa and get yourself a Dream Pod. Dream Pods are an amazing float tank. They're incredibly high-end, one of the best tanks on the market, and now you can get them here locally in the U.S. So go to crystalwaterfloat.com or go to dream-pod.com and learn all about the Dream Pods. They have their flagship model, which is the V2. It's a beautiful, beautiful tank. It also comes in a variety of colors, including their black Stealth, which is an awesome tank to float in. And they also have the Dream Pod Mini, which is perfect for smaller spaces. Maybe you're just adding in a float tank or a Dream Pod into some existing business already. But they have all those options available for you to really streamline and make it as easy as possible. And they have great customer service. So check them out. On today's episode of the podcast, I got to sit down with Sean McCormick from Float Seattle. This is a float story that we recorded at the 2016 Float Conference up in Portland, Oregon. And Sean was visiting the conference. We had the opportunity to sit down and chat. He's quite an amazing guy, and I loved getting to know him. He's got a lot of interesting ideas and concepts, not just around floating, but also energy work, turns out. Sean's a certified life coach, and he works closely with his clients in conjunction with helping them to become the best, most fullest person that they possibly can. You can go find him at seanmccormick.org, or you can go to floatseattle.com and learn all about his float centers up in Seattle. We dive deep in this episode, deep into a lot of stuff. So sit back, folks, relax, push play, and enjoy this episode of the Energy is Love podcast with Sean McCormick.
You're listening to the Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is the Love podcast.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is Love podcast.
The podcast for the universe.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Here we are, Portland, Oregon, with Sean McCormick. How are you, man?
I'm good. I just got out of a car after 4.5 hours.
Yeah, you just barely rolled into town, right?
Yeah.
Just how was the drive down?
It was brutal.
Traffic, I imagine.
It was really bad. I totally underestimated the whole thing. I mean, I missed my speaking engagement because I just got stuck. Like, it was gridlocked from Seattle to Tacoma.
Yeah. How long ago did you leave? What time did you leave today?
I gave myself I left at 11 o'clock, so I gave myself basically 5 hours.
Thinking you'd be good.
Thinking usually it's 3.5, maybe 4, maybe.
Yeah. And it was just miserable.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Whoops.
Yeah. Well, we got lots to talk about, and I cannot thank you enough for sitting down and making the time. I know we're super busy with all this shit going on this weekend with the conference and all that kind of stuff, but it's pretty awesome for me as the host of the podcast to get to chat with you and, of course, everybody else out here at the conference. I'm assuming you've been to the conference before.
Yeah, this is my third one. The first one that I went to, they used to have in Europe, and so my wife and I went to the native pronunciation is Hüteborg, which is Gothenburg, Sweden, and so we went in 2011. My wife and I went out there, and there was like 28 or 30 people, I think, it was really tiny.
Only back in 2011, huh?
Yeah. Maybe it was a tad earlier than that. Maybe it was more like 2009, 2010, but I mean, not long ago. And obviously the guys from Float On are just magic.
They're just wizards.
They pay attention to everything.
Apparently this is supposed to be the biggest one yet.
Yeah. So and next year?
For it.
Even bigger.
Yeah.
That's what I heard.
To it. So you're from Float Seattle, right?
Yeah. Float Seattle and Float Bellevue.
Tell me a little bit about how you got into floating. Was it the type of thing? I've talked to a lot of people who, you know, end up floating in some guy's basement who rigged up some sort of sensory deprivation tank and had his buddies jump in. Was it like that for you? Or
it did occur in a basement. I mean, that's how cliche my answer is.
If you're going to put a tank in your house,
I should just
the basement's the best
It was
spot.
A basement. Yeah, just like every other run-of-the-mill.
Yeah.
I found it on Craigslist, and it was basement.
You found it on Craigslist?
Yeah, that's how bad I wanted to float.
Wow.
But he's this really cool, crunchy, yogi, massage therapist, guy named Brian, and it was in just outside of town. And, showering his kids' bathtub and his kids shower, and he saw me in the buff, but it was cool.
It was a good flow.
It was an amazing flow.
That's sweet.
It was
because that's got potential for like I'm gonna be kidnapped and shipped off to Mexico.
Yeah
you find a float tank in the basement of some guy's house on Craigslist.
He's probably nice.
Yeah. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, it's just that razor's edge, right? You want it, you know, you'll do anything. My first float was transcendent, and the reason what drew me to floating was my interest and practice, my meditation practice. I've meditated since I was a kid and have experimented with different disciplines and continued to come across the reference to mindfulness and sensory deprivation and dug into it, and then left on my lunch break, my sales job, and drove out to Bellevue, 20 minutes, and floated to this guy's basement, not knowing what to expect. I was in a really great space mentally in my meditation. I was meditating really regularly and was having really deep experiences, a lot of bliss.
When you say you've been meditating since you were a kid, that's not common.
No, not really. Not for white kids from the suburbs.
No, definitely not. Was it the type of thing where your parents taught you about it, you learned about it, or were you just like super into it regardless?
They did. My folks did TM in college. They learned TM in college. That's transcendental meditation. I'm sure the audience knows what
some
TM
of them.
Is.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the cool things is we get to educate people. So I'm glad you said it. Yeah, transcendental.
So TM is transcendental meditation, and it's what Russell Brand does, it's what David Lynch does, it's what Seinfeld does. It's really popular with creatives, and it came from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and it's specific and includes the internal recitation of a mantra that you are given. And my folks learned that in college, I was about 12 years old when I first started, and my folks, I was a busy kid. I'm still a busy big kid.
Yeah.
And they're like, we need something. We got to do something with you. Cause like running you up and down the backyard and all the sports you're playing, you still come home and drive us nuts.
Yeah. Fast forward, you probably would have been diagnosed like ADD.
Oh, I definitely would have been.
On Ritalin or something like
I certainly would have been. Yeah. And I just had a ton of energy.
Yeah.
And that's just how I'm built. That's just me. So,
Parents must have been total hippies then if they're doing TM in college.
It's funny, like they're not really, they're not, you know, they're forward thinking for sure. Mm-hmm. Spiritually. My dad's a sci-fi, avid sci-fi reader. I mean, like hundreds and hundreds of sci-fi novels. And, my mother is sort of a spiritualist. She's a teacher and she's a nurse now, or a medical assistant. So, they just decided, well, let's just try this. Like, we know how to do this. They didn't meditate very regularly.
Yeah.
But it made an instant change. I liked it. It felt good. Like,
I was going to say, like, physically. Do you remember back in the day when you started, kind of the effect it had on you and stuff?
They stayed on me for the first like week, which was good because the second I closed my eyes, I wanted it to be over. Mm-hmm. Like this is so stupid. I could be doing other things. So I didn't pick it up that quickly, but I got glimpses of these sort of non-normal states of consciousness at 12, and some of them went very deep and some of them felt very good. Just total, just like energy is love podcast.
just that good, deep connection that you get in meditation.
Yeah. That blissful, that warm, sort of an higher level of knowing about yourself and your consciousness. And so fast forward, I meditated off and on sometimes really strictly, other times not so much, but I kind of had a meditation practice and I was in good. And then my first float, it was 10 times the experience, in poignancy and in,
like density.
Yeah.
There's times where it's hard to verbalize and put into words, I think, like, because if you're meditating already, like there's good and bad meditations. It's always a practice, I think. But then there's times where you just have a fucking kick-ass meditation that is so convoluted, not like in a, I can't make sense of all of this. It just has so many layers and
right.
It's deep and it's dense and it has so much stuff.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was looking for in my seated meditation, TM and Zazen and some sinking breath work. And then I floated. And in my first float, I projected out of my body.
Nice.
And that changed everything.
Had you never kind of had that experience yet?
I hadn't had that experience. I had had, shortly thereafter, I had a few meditative projections, non-voluntarily. And so that was my first that I could really remember. I may have had some experiences when I was a kid, you know, like the flying dream, but it's not just, it's something different. It's like you're sort of lucid.
Kind of, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I didn't do anything about floating. I floated off and on every couple of months after that.
Back to the Craigslist guy's house.
Yeah, back to the Craigslist guy's house. And I kept waiting for one to open in Seattle and waiting and it never did. And I started to do some research and put it together.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
That's somebody, I mean, I love listening to that. A lot of times they're similar in a way. It's funny because the stories where people, like everybody's path and journey to floating, especially if there's somebody that runs in center or operates it or they're in the industry in some way, shape or form, it's because they have that passion.
Yeah.
And it's real similar to like when you find people in spirituality and in energy work and things like that, where they're like, this stuff just started happening and I kind of was drawn to it. And now I want to, you know, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And they find themselves in that way. And so it's similar in that way with floating and stuff.
But totally.
That's cool. So you opened up Flow Seattle. And I can't even imagine. I mean, Seattle didn't have it at that point.
No,
it didn't. Like you would think that something.
The last, so we opened in 2012, November of 2012. And the last, you know, proper float center that wasn't in somebody's house was in, I think it was in 1998. And there was a couple of float centers in the 80s and 90s in Seattle. There was one at like Pike Place Market, apparently. And then there's another center. But yeah, it'd been a long time and for no good reason at all. Like, yeah.
It was just waiting for you.
It was. It was just the right time. And shortly after I opened, somebody else opened in Seattle. And then they opened another one. And then we opened another one. And then they've opened a third. And then another one opened. So now I think that there's six in Seattle and then there's two on the east side, on the other side of the lake where Microsoft and everybody, all the tech is, there's two there and then there's another. Yeah. So it's, I mean, I, as a testament to the float conference, which everybody's come here for, is like, this is, and I don't want to cut to the last chapter of the book, but I feel very strongly that floating is the most accessible, most effective way to grow yourself mentally, physically, and spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bar none. Meditation is, I think, fundamental. You know, there's the use of entheogens, ecstatic breath work, all of these things that one could do to raise their vibration, to become more aware of themselves and the interconnectedness of things and sort of upgrade their consciousness. And this, I think, is by far the best.
Yeah. For me personally, like when I found it, I was interested in everything like that. And we lucked out. I didn't have to find it on Craigslist. There was actually a center in Salt Lake at the time. And I went and tried it out. And it was funny because I was so jazzed. Like I had read up. I knew everything. I was so ready to go because I was bound and determined I was going to have just the most kick-ass amazing experience.
Right.
and it sucked.
Yeah, you got water in your eye.
Yeah, I laid back in the tank, and it was like, man, I get out, and I'm like, what the hell was that? Like, yeah, it was nice, and I enjoyed aspects of it, but it definitely didn't. I was looking for that meditation on steroids. Like, I was looking for that experience where I went super deep and had all these, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'd had some of that during meditation. I'd had some really, really good experiences, and so in my mind, I thought this is going to just kick it up a notch.
Totally.
And instead, it was like, just kind of imploded into this laying naked in a tub of salt water shit that it's like, what am I doing here? I don't get it.
Right.
But we tell people that all the time. Like, the first one sometimes sucks, and you just got to stick with it.
Yeah. 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 I think that there's, it's a risk to go do it. You know, you have to, it's so unusual that you build it up in your mind. Like, oh, it's going to be this, it's going to be that, or I'm going to think this, or I'm going to think that. You're hyper aware of like every little sound. You're like listening, like, am I really that? And then you hear what you think is something that may or may not be something.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I want it so bad. And of course it's not going to come to you when you want it so bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like grasping handfuls of sand, you know? So that's a really, obviously, you know, that's a really common first experience.
It is, like, yeah, it's
funny. That was fine, whatever.
I get pissed off. We have people come to our space, and it's like they get in and float, and it's their first time, and they come out, and they're like, oh my God, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you bastard.
Yeah.
But that's how it is. Some people just hit it right off the bat, and it connects with them and everything like that.
Right.
Let's go in, because when I found all your stuff, we were chatting a little bit before we pushed record and everything like that, but you were like the perfect guest for the podcast. Because not only do we get a hit on floating, and you run your business, and you have all those aspects of it, and we like to bring awareness to all the aspects of floating, so that we can spread it out there, and people all over can go find a freaking tub and jump in. But you also do all this really good stuff. I mean, I didn't realize that you'd been meditating since you were 12. That's just incredible. What other kind of, do you have any specific modality that you use? I know that you kind of, let's make it easy. You tell me what you do when you work with somebody. How's that sound?
When I work one-on-one individually with somebody?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, the most, I mean, I...
Like, if I'm going to come to you, I contact Sean,
out.
And I'm going to come and I say, yeah, I'm struggling in life in these aspects here and there.
Yeah.
What are you going to do for me? How are you going to help me?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a certified life coach too. I'm sure you saw that.
Yeah.
So that... that's growing and changing. It's still pretty new for me. But when it comes to helping somebody out, most of the folks that I talk to that ask for my help are people that are kind of like you and me, which you get caught up in the crossing the T's and dotting the I's of life, that you know there's something else more and you want that something else more. You're not quite where you were, you know, talk about the, I don't know if you're familiar with the term gap work. You're not quite where you were. You're not quite where you want to be. You're somewhere in the middle. You're sort of just transitioning, right? And so they're really sort of isolated. My life coaching practice is helping people understand what they really want to be doing with their day, every day. What they want to do with their life, how they can optimize their life. That's through supplementation. I'm a champion for Natural Stacks. Natural Stacks is a supplement company that I am a huge fan of. So when I'm life coaching somebody, I'm not only helping them realize what they want and help them figure out how to get it, which through pointed questions, through expanding their awareness, but we may do some breath work before. we may do, certainly I suggest people float, as part of their, spiritual path and like sort of finding themselves. But when I'm coaching somebody with floating, when somebody wants to float better or float more, like there's a couple of, pro athletes that I work with pretty closely and, I help them maximize their experience in the float tank because for them, recovery is everything. How quickly can they get back to performing at that high level? And so talking with them about techniques to use in the float tank, visualization techniques to do in the float tank, breath work, intention setting, cold showers, caffeine 2 hours before, SILTEP 1 hour before, fasted floating. These are all sort of the things that I work with these guys with to like get them to recover at the fastest rate possible.
Yeah, so they're really kind of separated. Maximize that time in the tank, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we think about the way that you kind of work with, I mean, I don't know if you can necessarily consider yourself, like, do you consider that you work with energy in a sense? Is that kind of how you view it? Or what is your perspective on all that cosmic shit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. My, that's, getting right to it. And it's funny because I don't think about it that often, the work that I do energetically. Most of the time, if I'm working with somebody or if I know somebody that just wants to enhance their life and explore a spiritual side, I'll either point them to a friend of mine who is an ayahuascaro. I'll point them to the float tank because I know, because their stress levels are too high and they need to chill out. I also do some work with stones. I do energy clearing in people's houses. It's kind of all over the map.
It is kind of, but I mean, obviously it sounds to me like you're working with energy, especially if you're doing things like you're clearing houses and you're working with stones.
Yeah.
And I think the reality is too that, because listening to you, my guess is that even when you're working with a client who's come to you for like the coaching aspect of everything, you're tapping into them in that kind of sub-frequency level where they're connected to them intuitively and helping them through their process and guiding them and things like that. Because you can go get a certification to be a life coach. That doesn't mean you're going to be a good life coach.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of fucked up shitty life coaches out there that shouldn't be life coaching.
Right.
Who shouldn't even, you know, but that's neither here nor there. But my guess is that you naturally have that connection with people.
Yeah.
Is that something that you've always kind of been aware of, or is it just something that's kind of run in the background?
It's always been at the forefront of my life. I mean, I was the kindergarten class president, and I was my senior year of high school class or student body president, captain of soccer teams. Like, leadership, showing up, being authentic has always been part of who I am. And I think people are drawn to that. And I think people see that and want that for themselves too, that sort of confidence and that sort of forward leaning raising of their vibration.
Yeah.
And the sort of subconscious energy work that I'm doing with people, whether it's a conversation or a life coaching session, it's about shining a light on them to have them understand their beauty and where they want to be and where they can be. And whether that's through a conversation or a podcast, like, I think that I'm just sort of this conductor of the universe to like raise people up and ratchet people up, you know, little by little and in various different ways. And that's what drew me to floating, because I thought, you know, like, I wanted to help people and make money and, you know, feed myself and
not have to float in some guy's basement
and not have to float.
I don't mean to get, it just cracks me up, man. I love it.
The fact that it's so common is pretty funny.
Yeah, it is common. I don't know if it's necessarily common that people find them on Craigslist, but that's cool.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm the disciplines that I've pulled from, that I've read, that I've studied on, I don't know that I have like a pinpointed worldview or I mean, I believe that we reincarnate. I believe that some of that is reinforced by the work that I do in astral projection.
Well, let's talk about reincarnation, because that's something that, I mean, that is dogma. And when I say dogma, not in a negative way, but that is a belief, that is a teaching in some place. That is something that has been around for a very, very, very long time. It's very rooted, and people have, because I don't believe in reincarnation, but I believe that, I don't know, I get lost in the spin of what I believe, but like, why do you believe in reincarnation? What about it?
Yeah.
Like you said, you've had work with it in regards to the astral plane and things like that. So explain to me why you believe in it.
Right. So I have always had a sense that, that this is a temporary vessel. It is a temporary vessel. And from the way that I live my life and I don't look back very often. I'm not very retrospective. I don't think about the past much. Most of my thinking is moving forward. And I've always had sort of an inborn sense that I would pass on, and whether I came back right away or stayed up in another dimension for a while, I always thought that this is one episode. And that was reinforced by the Tibetan Book of the Dead, reading the Duat, reinforced by some absolutely beautiful and crystal clear experiences that I've had on ayahuasca, reinforced by DMT, reinforced by experiences in the astral plane where there are lots of dimensions and lots of possibilities. And in astral projection, you are essentially attached to your body with a silver cord that dangles from the base of your skull and the back of your neck. And when that's severed, you detach into that other plane. And there's other dimensions that are going on. And it's clear, it's been clear a couple of times to me in this astral plane. Still got a lot of work to do. Is that like this is part of the story. There's a transition point in which you will connect with all of the people in both the life that you lived and the people that were your spirit guides or helper guides or however you want, or your angels, however you want to characterize them.
Yeah.
Those people are they're not down on this plane right now. You are this time. And when you pop back up to them, it's like, hey, what's up? You know, you're doing high fives. Like, that was a good one. Like, that was fun. Thanks for your help. That was really great. What's the next one? I believe, and again, this is substantiated by my own personal experience. I'm sort of, I don't want to just be told stuff. I want to experience it. I want to have know, you know, I want to know it. And then some other work that I've done with an intuit, this really beautiful woman named Joan German that works out of Seattle and actually Portland. She's guided me through some things to see the network of people that I have in this life I've had before. Like I know my son, but he and I have hung out before. My wife, we've done things before. There's a sense of that, and it just keeps getting reinforced by all of these sort of non-normal states of consciousness.
So I'll tell you, like, this is where I ran into issues along my path and my journey when we started to explore all these different things and these possibilities. And I'm like you, like I want experience first, right? Yeah, you can tell me, you can give me some ideas. Some of it's going to resonate, some of it's going to connect, but I want to go out and I want to test it. I want to question it. I want to challenge it. I want to have my own experience of what it is. And the biggest thing that kind of changed Mike, because for a very, very long time, I've had tons of past life experiences where I would go back and I would have that memory. I would have that thing. I would have something that would very typically classically be described as like a past life experience or like a journey into a past life. You know, somebody would take you on that and walk you through that process and everything like that.
In what states were you in that you had these experiences?
What do you mean? Like,
were you sleeping? Were you?
No, they were
meditating, hiking.
Like some of them I've had. Like sometimes it's when my wife and I will meditate together, or we've had them before, like we've gone to like sound healing concerts and things like that. And then there's been other times when it's actually been like working one-on-one with somebody else who would do that, facilitate that experience. So it's been a variety of different things, but I would very, very classically describe them as a past life experience, right? And then what happened was I got to the space where I'm like, okay, if that's a past and we got the future and things like that, like all that shit has to go out the window because I'm really a strong believer. Like for me, my faith, I have a handful of like tenets that I call upon that these are things that I kind of undoubtedly know for a fact. And even those things I question and challenge, but the present and the now.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about. And so if that's the case, and I feel that that's the case, then that means the past can't be the past. Hmm. It kind of erases the past because there is no past if there's only now. So I had to kind of really question and go in and examine and question all of these different things. And so I had that whole process, and what I came to, and this is for me, right? This is my stuff. This isn't anything that anybody told me about. I don't think that it's linear. I don't think there's past. I don't think there's future. I think it is all happening right now. And I think I had past life experiences or what we would typically classify as that. But what I think that was me connecting with my energy in some other dimension, some other realm,
sure,
even some other place on this planet. It doesn't matter because of the interdimensionality of how expansive energy is and all that kind of stuff. And so I would sync up with my energy at that moment. Because if you have a past life experience, typically people draw from those. They gain insight into this present moment. Mm-hmm. And it kind of helps them along their journey and their path and their understanding and things like that. And so I think that when you have those experiences, it's not a past life. It's a current right now happening where your energy is over here in this space. And for whatever reason, the two of you are syncing up and lining up, because the fact is we're all connected and all that kind of spin and stuff. So that's for me.
Yeah.
So that's why it's like, do I believe in reincarnation? Not in the typical way that they necessarily describe it or talk about it, but I think that I'll very much inhabit something else after I die.
Sure.
In some other place or realm or dimension. You know, I gave up a long time ago trying to understand or quantify all of that stuff because there's just too much.
But yeah.
I think I definitely go on. I think everybody goes on in some form or fashion.
Go somewhere.
And the same thing, like you talked about, like you have your spirit guides that are going to be there, and you're going to, you know, your angels and all these different things that have been supporting you along this trip and along this journey. You get to reconnect with them. See, and I feel like I'm my spirit guide.
Sure.
You know,
I believe that too.
And so it's like that, whatever mine
is. Your highest self.
Yeah. You know, that person that I associate with being a spirit guide, or what we would classify as that. The reality is that's just another form of my energy who is in fact helping me right now. But at the same time, they're gleaming information from me and my experience, right? So they're learning from this, and it's helping them in the dimension that they're living in and what they're doing and what they're moving through.
Sure. It's just more Craig.
Exactly.
And instead of a linear sort of, this was a life and then you died and then you had another life and then you died.
I got so wrapped up in linear doesn't make sense to me, you know?
Yeah. I've been told that too. Yeah. That linear, it's that thinking about it in that way is troublesome. Your thought about it is that instead of like a life in the past, it's a life in the present in another dimension.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Even the things that like if we were to go back and, you know, we have history, like we have history that exists and take place, and we learned about it in school and we talk about it, and we have all of this past stuff that's happened in our culture and our society that we classify as the past or we classify as history. I don't think it's the past. I think it's all happening right now. Well, then you're like, well, how the hell can we know about it if, you know, the dynamics of that, I get kind of lost in.
Sure.
I feel like I need to have like some sort of degree in physics or something.
Well, I mean, waxing poetic about time is about as heady as you can get. Yeah. So if you don't have it all buttoned up right now, I know he's going to fault you for it.
But it, I mean, for me, that's what it boiled down to. And so I don't know.
Interesting.
And I could question it. I always throw it back into the blender and see what comes out.
Cause
who knows?
Yeah.
I could totally be wrong.
I was sort of open to non-denominational. I've had exposure to several different religions, and meditating and the use of entheogens are the strongest.
Explain to everybody what those are.
Yeah.
So then they understand.
So, sorry about that. I should have. So an entheogen is a substance that you take to reach non-normal states of consciousness in a way of searching, in a way of trying to explore yourself. You know, psychedelics or entheogens, when they're used in a purposeful way. Peyote ceremony, iboga. Peyote's a cat from Utah.
Yeah, I know peyote.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of peyote? It's this new,
really cool thing.
It's a cactus. I don't know.
Yeah, it's only been around a few years.
That's an entheogen. It's a ceremonial use of a substance to reach heightened states of consciousness. And so that's the long and short of it. And I think that meditation, floating, which are very similar in a lot of different ways. I mean, in a lot of ways, and the use of entheogens. I think like ecstatic breath work is probably in there too somewhere. Those are all ways to experience consciousness in a different way that informs your life, that informs your brain, that breaks open your head and allows you to explore possibilities. So that's what an entheogen is.
Let's talk about that shit.
Yeah.
Like, how into it are you? How much have you?
I do it every day. In fact, right now I'm on like 6 handfuls of psilocybin. I hope that's not weird.
That was an interesting drive down from Seattle. Yeah. No wonder it took you 5 hours.
I flew to actually. I got stuck in a truck and it just flew down here.
How much have you, because I think that all of the, first off, those things have a negative connotation, right?
Sure.
They have a stigma attached to it. It's going to be obviously viewed and looked at like it has throughout society as drugs are bad and all that kind of bullshit. But I think the fact is when they're used in conjunction, when they're used consciously, like there's nothing wrong with occasional recreational use, I feel, of absolutely anything.
Sure. Right?
But if you're going to use those consciously in the space of further exploration of spirituality and mindfulness and just really diving deeper into who you are, I think that's amazing. I think it's incredible. And I think it's very purposeful. And I think that there's, I mean, I think that's why they're here. Because the vast majority of them, they're not created. You know, they're here. Yeah. They've been here for a very, very long time. I think that's the purpose of why they're on this planet.
Yeah. Rick Doblin from MAPS is speaking this weekend.
I know, tomorrow.
Yeah.
I tried to get him on the show.
He's probably got a lot going on.
My guess was he was pretty busy, man.
He's got a ton of things on his plate. Support, I mean, that's what MAPS is all about, is supporting psychedelic use and research and application to help people. We've been stigmatized. The prohibition against drugs is just ridiculous. I mean, it's going nowhere. It's a gigantic waste of resources. There's so many problems with it. And if they're done, we should be able to do whatever the fuck we want with our consciousness. We should really not be able to be told, no, you can't eat that or smoke that or do this. You're going to do it anyway. And, Graham Hancock, uh-huh. He says, talks about sovereignty over your consciousness, and you should be able to pick and choose. And if you're doing drugs in an environment where you shouldn't be, where it's not purposeful, where it's a little bit too squirrely, and you're not sort of respecting the power of the opportunity, that's an abuse of it to a certain extent. And sometimes it's fun to eat ecstasy and go dance. I mean, that's healing for sure. That's major important stuff. But one of the things that the reason why there's a sort of a resurgence in psychedelics is that people like myself and countless other folks are starting to like sort of be honest and upfront with it and how they use it and what they do and how they do it and why and what they gain from it.
I was going to say what the benefits are.
Right. Because
that's the fact is, I mean, that stereotype of it is, we'll just use weed, for example. Marijuana is just really easy one because it's been around. It's well known. You know what I mean? We just start talking about ayahuasca and psilocybin and MDMA. All those things aren't necessarily as well known. But it's so easy just to classify somebody that smokes weed as a pothead.
Right.
And it's somebody that's just a fucking waste and they're just smoking, and, you know. But the fact is, highly successful people smoke marijuana and they use it responsibly and they use it purposefully.
Michael Phelps just won 21 gold medals and he loves weed.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said there.
Right.
What are some of the, like, what is your purpose behind it? When you experiment with things, when you're trying things, when you're incorporating them into that expansiveness of wanting to dive deeper into stuff, tell me about it. What do you do?
Ultimately, it's about how I can best be of service. How I can fill my role to better humanity, the people around me. That's what I have control over. That's what I get to be concerned with in this life, is to try to help and try to benefit as many people as possible. And that's what I try to do, honestly. And meditation helps inform that. Floating helps inform that. 3 days of ayahuasca ceremonies back to back to back help inform that. They help unlock the things inside me and inside of the other people inside the yurt where we're having the ceremony together. It's allowing people not only to deal with the stuff in their life that's not easily dealt with by themselves and with the use of the plant medicine, but you learn more about yourself and you become a more authentic version of yourself, because the boundary dissolution that occurs lets all of your bumps and bruises and warts show, all of your baggage and everything just comes up to the front. And of course it takes time, but that's the point, is to address what's going on for you in your life, for you to start to take note of that and make an action plan to figure that stuff out, whether that's you have a lot of stress or whether that's you've got an incident from your childhood that you need to kind of work through, whether that's addiction or that sort of thing. I know it. They can help you. It can help you work through some of that stuff. For me personally, partake in entheogens and ceremonies when I think it's time for me, when I feel called to it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're looking for a firm number, I do ayahuasca probably 4 times a year, maybe 5 times a year. That's probably my most, that's the most frequent use of entheogens in this case. And it's always with intention. It's always with a purpose.
I don't know how, I mean, I'm sure people are out, there's obviously, I have no doubt that somebody's out there abusing ayahuasca.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't imagine how you could, because it's like,
it's not particularly fun.
No, I haven't ever had the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to the time when it does come. But I've heard and I've read and I've listened to tons of stories and tellings of it. And like you said, it's not fun.
No.
Like, it puts you down and kicks your ass.
It's not a party drug. It's serious. I mean, it's serious medicine. You know, it's very potent, very
if you've done it that frequently, yeah. Or not necessarily that frequently, but if you've done it that handful of times, that many times before, are each of those experiences vastly different, or do you find common themes and whatnot during those journeys and those experiences?
For me, the first 6 or 7 were so big and so dense with information and insight that I was just trying to keep up. And since then, they have shifted more towards using it as a tool to help improve myself and the people around me and have a bigger picture. Like I was astonished. I mean, absolutely astonished when the first, you know, like I think six or so experiences, just like absolutely blown away by what I felt and what I saw and what I experienced. And then I think once I kind of got not a hold on it, because that will never happen. I'm like, oh, I got it figured out. I got it.
Yeah,
it's
I
cool.
got that shit squared away.
Yeah, it's no problem. It is now a tool for me to help like get to the root of issues in my life and resolve them. It's very like informative, and it's also spiritually very like recharging for me. It's like a consciousness boot camp, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you just go up somewhere in the yurt and stay there for 3 days or whatever?
So, you know, there's a lot of tourism for ayahuasca in Peru. Uh-huh. And that's what a lot of people do, is they'll take a trip and they'll go for a week and you know, drink 3 or 4 times or more. They'll go for 2 weeks and drink 10 times and then come back. And the source methodology or the tribal approach is from a specific tribe in Peru that the shaman that work on me have studied through the Shipibo people. And so that's their version of it. You know, like in Oregon, there's a place called Santo Daime, and they use it in like a church setting. It's Christian, but it uses it as a sacrament. And the ayahuasca ceremonies that I partake and have partaken in are a tribal discipline with, it's very quiet and dark, and you kind of go through their stuff, and the shaman is singing. I go, it's in Washington State. And so I just go and, like when I'm called to it, I'll, you know, me and this guy, I'm trying to protect his, it sounds shady. It's not shady. I'm just trying to protect his anonymity.
For sure.
So, but he's a very serious practitioner of it. And, you know, he tells me when weekends are coming up, and then we connect, and yeah.
I'm going to keep being a dick.
Let's keep being a dick.
You totally found him on Craigslist. I'm kind of an
ass.
That's
too easy.
It is too
That's
easy.
That's too easy.
I'll go to the easy one every time.
Yeah. It's...
Do you think it ever, I mean, do you think, like we talked about maps and everything like that and the work that they're doing, do you ever think there's going to come that point where it's mainstreamed in the sense that it's accepted and it's the norm? Or do you think that stigma of all of those different things, all those psychedelics and all those different aspects, are always going to be there?
I think that inevitably it's going to, I think people are going back to tribal methods of healing, whether it's crystals or cupping or Qigong, whatever these methods are, we're sort of going back to that. I think as a general population, the people that are kind of switched on and curious, you know, seeker types,
yeah,
they're going to find this sort of stuff and they're going to be drawn to whichever modality, you know. And you know better than anybody, the sort of people that you talk to, all these different modalities of people like, this is my specialty, like, mm-hmm. You know, the what was the woman, the German woman who did the
NLP?
The NLP.
Yeah.
Like that's a discipline. Mm-hmm. So I think much like that psychedelics overall, especially with the work that MAPS is doing, is ushering this in and like trying to like help it and take care of it and manage as much as we can, because it's hugely beneficial to people. I mean, cannabis alone, I mean, it's legal in this state. It's not in Utah.
Oh, no.
Certainly not.
They tried to yeah. get it on the ballot. Not necessarily the full legalization, but just the medicinal.
Right.
Yeah, that shit didn't fly.
So I think that in another 10 or 20 years, everybody's going to be like, okay, we got to cut the shit. Let's be reasonable about this. And I think eventually they will be legalized, and there will be the people who are faking it, doing it, and holding ceremonies that shouldn't be. And then there will be just like a free market, like the people that are doing it right, that honor it, that are approaching, whether it's peyote or sweat lodges or what's the other? There's another cactus, San Pedro. Whether it's whatever the medicines are, whatever the plant medicines are, there will be the people that do it right, and those are the people that are going to have the greatest amount of change. And then there will be some hucksters on the side too. But I really do think that we're slowly figuring out how important it is.
Do you think we're going to move to full legalization of everything at some point? Probably not.
Probably not.
It's hard to imagine, right?
There's no financial incentive to it. And unless it becomes something, unless it's going to make more money and then pharma, unless it's going to, you know, like, until that's a whole bunch of money and a whole bunch of power backing the system to suppress it. And so it's going to take a while, and eventually, you know, there will be something that some, either substance or way of consuming will be regulated or bungled up. I think that's a long shot. Honestly,
it is a long shot. It's what I'm voting for.
Yeah,
like the candidate that wants to run on that platform, they've got my vote.
Yeah.
Do you follow politics? I don't want to dive into politics. I don't know why I just asked you that.
I do a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, it's asinine.
Yeah,
it's such a joke.
Yeah.
You said you've been coming to the conference for like the past 3 years, right?
Yep.
What's your favorite part about it?
It's such a unique group of people, and you're probably going to, you've either been told that already or
you're like, in the, you know, I've been here for 2 days and I've already seen that, man. It's super cool.
It's just, I mean, take such a hippie concept. Like all these weirdos just come from all over the country and, you know, other parts of the world to dork out on salty darkness.
Yeah.
Like, this is not an insurance convention. This is not like, you know, this is pretty unique. And the people that it draws in are really lovely people that want to help people. They're healers of a different kind. They're float center owners and operators that's their tool. It's also the information is cutting edge, and 5-10 years from now, when medicine really recognizes, when Western medicine really recognizes the power of flotation, we're gonna laugh at this time when it was like we were trying to you know, solidify it and substantiate it. Like it's powerful and it's really strong, and I think that the people here are at the forefront of it, and it's a pretty fun weekend.
Do you guys struggle with that up in Seattle as far as trying to, not necessarily the validity of it, but trying to, because like we've tried reaching out to, you know, even simple like chiropractors' offices and sports medicine and all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
just to build sort of a relationship with them. Not in any way, shape, or form trying to poach business, just looking at how, hey, look, you've got a client that's really suffering from this injury or that injury. Here's a great addition to that.
Yeah.
Have you guys tried any of that sort of aspect or that marketing? And it's not necessarily marketing. It's really just that you want to help people.
Yeah. Yeah. We've done work. We do trade stuff with hot yoga. We do trade stuff with, and when I say trade stuff, I mean their staff float with us and we go do yoga, or chiropractors like literally next door. It just turns out that I went to high school with a doctor. He floats with us and he suggests that people after they get their adjustment come in and float, because it allows the space in their spine. You don't get like the space created in your spine at the chiropractic and then go sit in a car for an hour and a half and like let it collapse back down. If you get an adjustment, it frees you up and then you go float. In addition to that, there's a naturopathic college called Bastyr, Bastyr. They're one of the biggest or one of the most heralded naturopathic universities in the country. And we've had a couple of doctors prescribe floating, specifically in car accidents because of the whiplash.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a woman, I always think of the first case. You know, there's been a lot of people that have come for whiplash recently, but she wrote a prescription based on information that I gave her that was based on a study that was done in like the 80s. And it was, I think he's speaking this weekend, Dr. Sudfeld, Dr. Peter Sudfeld, about reducing... or basically helping your central nervous system recover, because that impact of that and the whiplash of the car accident. And so what they found was that three floats on, so a float, a day off, a float, a day off, a float, and then 3 days off, and then a float, a day off, float, a day off, float, and do that three times. It's 9 floats in 27 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that has the greatest impact in like resetting your central nervous system and getting you back down to baseline. This woman couldn't receive any other sort of physical therapy because she was so beat up from the car accident, but she could float because it feels good and there's no gravity. I've seen it like normalized in that way.
Did she come and do that three?
She
three
did.
Three?
Yeah. She was, I mean, it changed her. I mean, it changed her after I think like the sixth, she was like, this is really drastic. Like I'm feeling more like myself. Like the, yeah, I mean, watching her go through it was pretty cool. And then she started to do some light massage and stuff like that. And I think, yeah. So it opened her up. It was reimbursed by health insurance.
That's so neat.
It's so rare too.
It is super rare. Yeah. It's one of those things. I mean, that's what we'd love to see in the industry, where that was commonplace. Like you would go to the doctor and they would prescribe, you know, you got to go have three floats or whatever the case is. Not because we're trying to build business. It's just the mere fact of like, get people in that water, have them float.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Like it helps your body. It helps your body. I mean, I think we're going to learn this weekend about maybe, I don't know if they're publishing the Epsom salt absorption. They're doing studies on to actually try to measure how much of the magnesium sulfate, how much of the Epsom salt gets absorbed, how much magnesium you're getting. And so I hope we're supposed to hear about, because that's big.
That is huge.
You say like you're going to get 1,000 milligrams of Epsom salt of magnesium in your body, something like 92% of all the American population is low in magnesium. Like, do you have a headache? You're low in magnesium. Are you cramping? Magnesium. Can you not shit or sleep or eat, or are you mad all the time? Yeah, you're probably low in magnesium. So that would be cool. I think there's so many talented people in floating now, and they're so enthusiastic about it. It's just going to blow up. It's going to continue to blow up.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think it's exciting. It also feels very kind of like, it feels like that, right? It feels like it's on that cusp, on that tipping point.
Yeah.
You say, I mean, you guys opened in 2012, if I remember, right? I mean, that's 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, that's not very long ago at all. And at that point in time, there weren't any centers in Seattle.
Right.
Do you feel like, I was going to ask you that too earlier when you were talking about how they just kind of kept popping up and mm-hmm. everything like that. Do you feel like the market's too saturated? Did you guys notice kind of a dip, or do you feel like it's pretty good? Like you guys are still rocking it and stuff.
I don't dig too deep into the numbers, and I know that some guys do, and that's awesome because it would be nice to be able to track that. I know that we get a little bit busier every month. I mean, it's seasonal. Summertime is slower for us, especially in Seattle when you get a little bit of sunshine, you just lose your mind because you're used to being rained on all year. So it's not like right now people are melting in Seattle right now because it's 95 degrees, 98 degrees, and people just don't know how to handle it. And not everybody has AC. I mean, a lot of people don't have AC in their houses. So they just like, people are just losing their minds. So most people don't, you know, we do see a dip in business in the summertime.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it's saturated yet. I don't think that there's too many float centers yet in Seattle. I think they're going to be, I mean, there's 4.4 million people in Seattle. Like, that's a ton of folks.
Yeah, that is.
I mean, and, you know, if your model is good and you have repeat people, you know, it's a practice. We always say it. It's like one is good, but, you know, going to yoga once is good.
Kind of pointless.
It's once. You did it. You stretched once. Good for you.
Congratulations.
You did a downward dog. Yeah.
What else do you do? Like, I love talking about all of this shit. This is what drives me. This is the stuff that the podcast is not only about, but it's what I'm about. It's one of those things that I love sitting around and thinking and kind of bullshitting about. But
where are you getting those bagpipes?
I don't know.
They're coming from outside. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Every now and then we pick up weird frequencies and stuff like that when we record. Aliens. But it's totally aliens. I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's totally aliens. Yeah. You ever seen that guy?
Yeah, totally.
I was going to be that guy for Halloween because
my
hair froze out.
Absolutely.
And my wife wanted me to do it. It was not saying
it's aliens, but it's aliens.
Yeah, totally. Let's talk about aliens.
Yeah, we can talk about aliens too.
What do you think about aliens?
Definitely seen a UFO.
Yeah.
Definitely seen a UFO. Wait, what was the question before that?
I love talking about all this stuff, but then at the same time, I think it's neat to talk just about you and what you're into and things like that. But now I'm curious what you think about aliens.
Fuck that, Sean. Let's talk aliens. We're gonna talk about aliens. So, where do I begin with aliens?
You've seen a UFO.
I've seen a UFO. It was in 2000 and it was in 2010. This is my family's sick of hearing it, except for my strange uncle. He likes hearing it. He likes hearing it. So, my wife was in a cruise with her sister in Puerto Rico for 2 months. So I had like our little studio apartment to ourselves, and I just doing the same thing every night, going to work, whatever, come back, make dinner. And I'm sitting there, nobody else saw it. It was just me. So, it was like November, so the leaves were off the trees, and I stepped outside just for a breath of fresh air. I poured a glass of wine. I hadn't had anything to drink of it. I poured a glass of wine, stepped out onto the deck on the back, and then all of a sudden I'm just sort of looking at the sky, And I'd also, you know, this was around the same period where I was pretty dialed into stuff. I was meditating really regularly. I was reading, I think I was reading Aleister Crowley, honestly, at that time. But like I was looking up at the stars and just gazing, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden this one bright star, it's like, that's not north. That's a big, huge star. And then it got bigger and it got bigger and bigger. And then it got smaller again. I'm like, what is that? And then I look off to my left-hand side and I see this, what I know is a satellite. I know what a satellite looks like. I'm sure in Utah, you've got amazing skies. Yeah, you know what a satellite looks like. It's the same constant rate of speed on a trajectory. So you're just watching it. And I was like, okay, so I don't know what that is, but that's a satellite. You know, I don't know what this thing is. So I like ignore the satellite. The satellite kind of crosses in the same sort of field of vision. The satellite was obviously way further away. And then this thing starts to like dance a little bit and make what look like almost like little squiggles that look like letters. I tried to take pictures of my phone. I couldn't take pictures of my phone. And I watched it and it's like 5 minutes. I'm watching this thing dance around and I like turn on the TV to see if anybody else is seeing this. Nobody else is seeing this.
Go right to CNN. It's going to be on there.
Yeah, totally. Like maybe local news or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, right. And so, I'm watching this thing dance, and then it starts to rotate and change colors, and then there's like red and blue and green colors on the outside of it as it's like twisting, and then it's making like crescent shapes back and forth, top to bottom. And then I'm watching this, I'm like, how long have I been standing out here? Look at my watch. I'm like, I've been out here for like 15 minutes watching this thing. Like, I gotta do something. So I pull it up. So I pull it up on my phone. It's like the UFO reporting and it was like the UFO reporting hotline.
Yeah.
I called in. And by this time, some clouds came in, and so I'm like watching it right as I'm doing this thing, and I'm like, it's going away, and finally the clouds cover and I can't see anything anymore. And so I called the UFO reporting network, and I talked to the lady, and it was like the recorder. Thank you for calling the UFO reporting hotline. I know it was all British. And then I get this guy on the phone, and I was like, hey, my name's Sean McCormick. I live in Seattle. I think I just saw something very unusual in the sky. And he's like, tell me your address and tell me your name and your number, and then please describe to me what happened. And I started describing. He's like, I think I know what you saw. And I was like, what, really? Like, somebody else must have called. So he was going to corroborate it. And he's like, I believe what you've seen is the International Space Station. And I was like, no, I saw that. I knew what that was. And he goes, based on where you are and where you were looking at this time, that's probably what you've seen. And I was like, no, I saw that also, but this was something completely different. And he's asking more questions. And he's like, I invite you to go online to write a report of your experience. And it appears that you may have seen an unidentified flying object. Click. And they click. I was like,
at the egg up. That's bizarre. I didn't realize there was some sort of hotline like that.
Yeah. So I made the report online, and then I checked it. Nobody else had seen anything like that. And then I checked it like a month later, and somebody else reported the same thing. Somebody else saw the same thing. They described it. It was a little, the description was a little bit different, but they were also in Seattle, and they were looking up and they saw this sort of same thing. It was, yeah.
That's weird.
Weird.
Did it appear to be closer than stars normally are?
Or? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but right. Not necessarily like as low as planes and.
Right. Yeah, no sound. Nothing moves in the sky like quite like that, yeah. Doing like crescent shapes, and it wasn't moving, so it wasn't on a, yeah. That was the UFO story. And then I've had this little was weirder. There have been other people in the float community that have reported interactions with gray aliens in float tanks.
Yeah.
Have you seen that before?
Uh-huh.
Have you ever had anything like that?
Not in the tank.
No?
No, not when floating.
I had a series of experiences when we first opened and I was floating really regularly. I had the experience of a gray kind of like poking his head in, like presenting himself in front of me in the darkness, very quietly, very subtly, and then disappearing. And it happened like, I think it happened like six or so floats in a row. And I was like, what is this kind of shit? Like,
yeah.
Just
yeah.
Like, whoop, it's there. I'm like, oh. And then of course, as soon as you do that, then it's like, it's harder to keep, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it starts to fade.
Right. So I've had that too.
Do you think that's aliens though? Or do you think that, cause have you ever seen faces in meditation?
Definitely. Yeah.
So do you think that's just what that was in a sense, or did it feel different?
It could have, it definitely felt different. It felt like, it wasn't like reverie. It wasn't like mental reverie. I'm thinking about this thing or thinking about that thing. And I have never experienced seeing like the classic corny gray alien with with the big black eyes on the outside and the big giant skull. Like I'd never experienced that before, but this thing was like definitely not a part of me. And it was just there just chilling. And then it left and then it came back the next float.
Yeah. That's probably not the best selling point. Totally. Or, you go put a, center somewhere where that's going to work very, very well.
Right. Right. Yeah. Area 51.
Float Roswell.
Totally. I couldn't think of the name.
Yeah. It'll be a good center.
Totally.
Somebody's going to steal that one.
I know.
Get down there.
Dang it.
Man, Sean, you didn't disappoint. It's so nice. I was so looking
forward to
talking
to you. What the hell did
we talk about? I don't remember. It was a good episode, though, and it was
nice.
Such a pleasure to meet with you and talk with you and chat with you.
It's my pleasure, man. I've been listening to your podcasts, and you pick really interesting people to interview, that's not a ego play on my part.
Mm-hmm. just the most amazing, beautiful guests I've ever seen in my life.
Exactly. It's really dynamic, intelligent, talented people that you're interviewing. I really appreciate what you're doing because there's a shortage of these sorts of conversations all over the place. And so to do it like you do and to be as consistent as you are, that takes a ton of work, man. I mean, you came into this hotel room where we're recording this and you're sweating like a beast lugging around that podcast gear.
No, but it's important.
It's cool work and I appreciate it. It's really my pleasure to
sit. Thank you.
Sit.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Everybody go have a beautiful, wonderful day. And this is a float story because we're in a float. We need to go float because I'm exhausted today. So I'm going to go hop in a tank. But thank you, everybody, for listening. Go enjoy the universe.
Have you ever heard of peyote? And in my first float, I projected out of my body. That changed everything. I want it so bad. And of course, it's not going to come to you when you want it so bad.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's about how I can best be of service, how I can fill my role to better humanity, the people around me.